Thanks for joining us for the Executive Series. Today I'm speaking with Gaurav Sodhi, who is the Deputy Head of Research at Intelligent Investor.
Gaurav.
Tom.
Great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Now, previously we spoke about some of the dynamics where the lithium space is concerned, but I suppose two very important commodities for Australian market participants are coal and iron ore. The dynamics around these commodities have been extremely fluid over the course of the last couple of months. The reopening of China has been quite an extraordinary catalyst. Big pullback in coal prices lately.
Yes.
But given the run-up that we've seen in prices, organisations are still capable of making and generating extraordinary cash flow given where these prices are relative to where they have been historically.
Oh yeah, Tom. The coal price has been extraordinary, and I think it's my view that it's actually the Ukraine war was an important driver of the price up to $400. But really, coal prices started moving well before the war happened, and I think there's a structural demand shift or structural supply gap in coal that's going to leave coal prices higher for much, much longer than people think. And it's not because of the war, it's because of chronic underinvestment into coal supply and the lag it takes to move off coal and onto renewables and other sources of energy. And the coal price it's still $190, it's more than halved from its peak, but it is still higher than at any other point in time in the history of thermal coal. So if you remove the Ukraine war bump, we're still at record high thermal coal prices, even though there's a supply glut in Europe, and spot sales in Europe are really small, and the economy is slowing. We've got all these headwinds for coal, and yet the price is still close to $200. I find that absolutely extraordinary, and it amazes me that there's so much negativity about coal, because the miners are just minting money even at these prices.
So I suppose the question around coal is, you know, at what point does the permission to mine coal become challenged, given the very complex conversation around climate change? But ultimately, I suppose what it highlights is that that's a very long-ranging discussion.
Yep.
And in this moment, you are dealing with some very practical conversations around just generating enough power to keep the lights on.
Yep. From my point of view, coal is really attractive because lots of other investors cannot own it. It's not as though this is a mysterious commodity that people don't understand. It's not as though the profits are hidden or that they're being misallocated. Dividends are flowing, profits are growing, production is rising.
Yeah.
The ESG constraints mean that investors cannot buy these stocks, and that just leaves the price and the yields more attractive for those who can. And I think that opportunity is just too good to ignore. And I think it's going to be around for a long time. Now, it does mean that the previous multiples and previous valuations of coal miners is gone. You're not going to see that. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of capital growth coming from coal miners. But I do expect to see high double-digit dividends coming from coal miners for quite a long time. And there's been comparisons made with tobacco. I think that's the right comparison.
Right. Okay. So for people who aren't familiar with the tobacco industry and the dynamics, that changed in a lumpy sort of way.
That's right.
But, you know, arguably there are still versions of it around at the moment. It's just sort of changed its complexion a little bit. The delivery device has certainly changed a lot.
Yeah, but there's no doubt that tobacco is in serial decline. It's in permanent decline. The way coal, there's no question, thermal coal is in permanent decline. And I would expect in 20 years from now, maybe 30 years from now, that we'd have much, much lower coal production than we do now. And I certainly hope that's the case as well, mind you. Until then, we're getting cash returns in terms of dividends that compensate us for that decline. And I think on a risk-reward basis, coal still is worth holding.
So I suppose, just to use your tobacco analogy again, that transition probably took at least 50 years?
I think so.
So it started arguably in the 60s in its first iteration, but it took a long time to play out. So you'd say a generation is what would be required to change the energy generation picture in the global economy.
That's a much more complicated question, Tom. But it's my view that it will take longer than what people expect. I think especially if you start looking into developing countries and the energy requirements there, to do so without fossil fuel is going to be difficult. It's going to require a lot of cash investment and a lot of technological know-how to get there. And I think the use case for coal remains quite strong. It's also worth pointing out that I think the coal market has permanently bifurcated as well. You know, it's not just one type of coal. I think this high energy, low ash, low polluting coal that we make mostly in Australia, that we supply mostly in Australia into Asian markets.
Clean coal.
It's not clean coal, but for an example, the 6,000 kcal Newcastle coal that we yep. sell here, that we benchmark here.
The benchmark, yeah.
Yep. If you burn those into Japanese, Taiwanese, Korean thermal plants, they will produce half as much emissions as the stuff that Indonesia produces going into Indian coal plants, for example.
Brown coal.
That's right. So we're talking about an equivalent emissions of a gas power station.
Yeah.
And the way coal is treated and the way gas is treated is quite differently, even though the emissions are quite similar. So I think there's, from my point of view, there's still an opportunity to make reasonable dividends from coal, although I think if you're expecting capital gains, you're going to be disappointed because there's just not enough buyers for coal equities to push those share prices up.
Well, that's an important consideration within that complex, is yeah. that universe is going to become smaller,
yep.
and the return structure is going to change, isn't it?
The return structure definitely is going to change. I would say the risks also change. Instead of being worried about the economic cycle and production issues and operational issues, we now need to be really concerned about regulations. Stranded assets is the key risk. But also we're seeing the way that Queensland hiked its royalty, I think is instructive of what governments all around the world will be tempted to do as well. I think we've got to make allowance for much lower profits than what it might appear to be the case today. For me, that's not a case for not owning coal stocks. That's a case for limiting your portfolio allocation to coal stocks. It's a how much question. It's not a yes or no question from my point of view.
So in terms of, I suppose, in a slightly nearer term picture, the reopening as far as China is concerned has played an important part in terms of the sentiment towards coal. How are you looking at prices behaving in the near term, given that they've fallen so steeply over the course of the last couple of months?
Yeah, look, I don't think it should surprise anyone that we've seen thermal coal prices fall. I think prices of $300-$400 are ludicrous. They are ludicrous and they should never have been expected to last. And it's healthy to see them fall back. But the average price of coal over the last 40, 50 years has been between $75 and $100 a ton. I think those averages are gone. I think we're looking now about $150 a ton plus is going to be the new average. And we've seen production costs rise a little bit, but the margin that coal miners are able to make, I think, is now permanently elevated.
Gaurav, great insights. Thanks very much for your time.
A pleasure, Tom. Nice to be here.
And thanks very much for joining us for the Executive Series.